Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host and tour guide, Yada. Each weekday morning, I strive to expose the beguiling and destructive myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. If you listen, your eyes will be opened and you may ultimately change your mind towards these human institutions. Instead of merely presenting the news this morning, my mission will be to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines, all while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then, during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you will be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Yahweh. Our phone number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program, is toll free, 877-300-7645. One of the things that was mentioned in the news is symbolic of all that separates so many Americans and people around the world, truthfully, from understanding. It was mentioned that a former Nazi, A concentration camp guard who was sought in connection with the atrocities that he and others perpetrated during World War II, died in Pennsylvania. What most people probably never even bothered to think of, wait a minute, he was born in Croatia, and yet he was a Nazi. Yeah, how did that happen? And what concentration camp was this individual responsible for that made his service so ghoulish when you consider all that happened throughout Poland? Well, there's a story there. And that story is the story that provides understanding for those whose minds are open and receptive. You see, the Nazis were extraordinarily tight in Croatia with the Croats. The Roman Catholic Church deliberately, purposefully, at its highest levels, embodied and promoted Nazism among the Croats in Croatia, which is insight number one, that rather than opposing Nazism, the Roman Catholic Church embraced it. Second, in league with Muhammad al-Husani, who we discussed at length in a show about 2 weeks ago, who is the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, in other words, the highest-ranking Muslim in that part of the world. He and his Bosnian Muslim SS troops, now there's another connection. You see, Muhammad Husani was one of Hitler's closest advisors. Muhammad Husani, if you read the Nuremberg trial transcripts, was the architect of the Final Solution. He was the individual who influenced Hitler to the point where Hitler had wanted to rob and then expel the Jews from Germany and Europe. But Husani suggested torturing them, enslaving them, and then killing them, which was the plan that was ultimately deployed. So, returning to Croatia and Bosnia and surrounding territories, the combination of this Islamic leader turned Nazi general, Muhammad Husani, and his Bosnian Muslim SS troops, and the integration of the Croats and the Roman Catholic Church in Croatia under the umbrella known as Ustasi, collectively they incarcerated, enslaved, tortured, and murdered 800,000 Serbian Christians and Jews. You see, the Roman Catholic Church has never been partial as to whom they kill. In fact, killing members of an opposition Christian group would be as beneficial from their point of view as anything else. And here they leagued with Muslims to kill what they consider to be Protestant Christians. And yet now, some 60 years after all of this occurred, the United States bombed the Serbs. The United States has gone and supported, gone to war and supported the Muslims and the Croats while continuing to harm their victims. We don't learn the lessons. We don't understand the affinity between Islam and Nazism. We don't understand the affinity between Nazism and the Roman Catholic Church, or that how all of those which we would normally consider to be strange bedfellows worked as one unit to perpetrate hellish atrocities upon Yahweh's chosen people and others. And yet this is the kind of thing that will repeat itself in the last days because we aren't aware. We don't understand. We don't bother to make these connections. We have Will on the line. Will called in during the show yesterday. He was talking about sources of inspiration and the Torah. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Well, good morning. Shalom, Yada. How are you?
Shalom. Good. Shalom, by the way, for those who do not know, means reconciliation. It's often translated peace, but peace is a derivative meaning. When you reconcile a relationship, you bring peace and harmony to that relationship. It's one of the more important words in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, because God's primary intent is to reconcile his relationship with us so that we can be a family. So shalom indeed.
Yes, it's a wonderful feeling inside, getting closer to knowing. And one of the revelations that I had about this journey, like I said before, I was doing this my whole life, questioning my parents and questioning church, mm-hmm. and asking questions. But when I was in college, a little over 3 years ago, I'm an old man, I'm almost 50, want to re-educate myself. He asked me a simple question, and what's amazing about him is he only asked, well, I asked you a question on your level of understanding of where, mm-hmm. Where you're coming from. He doesn't confuse. Mm-hmm. He's not the author of confusion. Because if he would have asked me, was my son Yehuda, that would have confused me right off the bat.
Yes.
Because I would have never known what that term meant. He asked me, was my son a Hebrew or not? And, of course, I said, for my Baptist upbringing, yeah, I already know he was Hebrew. He was coming to a Jewish family. He says, you need to start searching the Hebrew roots now. And that was led me on my journey for these last over 3 years. He led me to a gentleman named Michael Rood. He led me to people who get it closer. But then he starts slowly bringing it. And what I realized from Yahusha's statement is that the path is narrow. And my path kept getting more narrow and more narrow the more I learned. Like a tightrope. But it's a comfortable walk. Because I'm not afraid of him anymore.
Yeah, it is a narrowing walk, and sometimes the beginning of that walk can seem broad. It is only broad because you're not yet on the walk, but you are at least headed in the direction of it. Because really, the first thing you have to do is to come to recognize that societal indoctrination, this realm of political correctness and religiosity, and the political and patriotic milieu we live in, has so jaundiced our perspective that until we begin to walk away from that and at least toward the path, that we have no hope of understanding anything along the way. Now, a great example. Go ahead. I was going to say a great example of that is you mentioned an individual who I have indirectly come to know, and you also mentioned Hebrew roots. There is a movement called the Hebrew Roots Movement, which I think does as much harm as it does good. But sometimes,
sometimes away from some Messianic brethren I used to fellowship with,
right? That I would also.
Yeah.
Would agree there, too, that the Messianic movement does as much harm as it does good. Michael Rood, who's an individual you mentioned, does as much harm as he does good. And let me explain each of those. And it sounds like you're in agreement here, so I'm not, you know, appreciate the fact that the primary purpose of all the discussions we have on the program is to help others who are listening to the program engage in the same journey. So let me just take a moment, and what I'm going to say, Will, you probably already know, but there are probably some listeners out there that may not know. And let's just take a moment to discuss these things. Hebrew Roots helps, and that what it does is it takes the attention away from the so-called Christian New Testament. Almost all Christians' perspective is from Paul's letters, and they look at everything backwards, and their entire filter for their relationship with God is from the end of the story as opposed to the beginning of the story, and they're wearing goggles that are hugely fogged. Scripture is all written in Hebrew. It is the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and that's where Scripture ends. We have eyewitness accounts, and we have letters from those who opposed Yah's Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And so the first thing, just by understanding that the root of God's message to us, the root of the covenant, of this relationship that he would have with us, the root of his guidance to us, is all in Hebrew. And so we have to return to the root of it all if we're going to understand who Yahweh is and what he's offering. So that's really good. Now, unfortunately, the Hebrew Roots movement has the tendency to do the same thing that Messianic Jews do, which they end up blending rabbinical Judaism with Pauline Christianity, and they create a mess. But at least they'll point you in the right direction initially.
Yeah.
And so it is with each of these three things that you mentioned. They all have the benefit of they at least get you pointed in the right direction, but somewhere along the way, if your mind remains open, you'll question what they're saying, and you'll end up finding, you know, there's really only one individual whose testimony I can actually trust. And that's Yahweh.
There is only one,
you know. And I put myself right in that group. That's why I begin every one of my books by telling you I'm irrelevant. You know, the moment you think that I'm providing some...
Don't take my word for nothing. Check it out.
That's right. Well, all I want to do all of our listeners can go to introtogod.org and read the most recent compilation of Yahweh's testimony on the subjects most important to him. And you realize that the entire purpose is to provide readers with the tools that they themselves then can listen to what God has to say on their own, which is the greatest gift of all. And Will, when we return after the break, I'd like to hear the rest of your story and the rest of your journey. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're here with Will and talking about his journey as to how he began to narrow his path so that the path that he was walking was perfectly synced with the one that Yahweh had invited us to walk so that we could approach him. Hi, Will. Welcome back.
Thank you. Well,
so you were saying that your path narrowed over time and that it started off very simple and became more sophisticated in terms of your understanding over that period.
Pretty much so, and it gets narrow much more quickly as I have each day. The thing was with my ex-Messianic brothers and sisters that I was fellowshipping with, my wife and stuff. I always question everything.
Good.
Okay. Everything, I question everything.
Good.
When all of us were in agreement that the Mesorites took out Yahweh, or they called him Yahweh, which I did in the beginning, too. That's the name I was led to before. But when I understand his name is Yahweh, and Yahusha, his son, we all agreed, though, that his name was taken out, and the Lord was replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And we all agreed that Lord was associated with Baal.
Right.
Or how I pronounce it, that before it was Baal, but Baal.
No, that's fine.
And
it's
associated with Satan. I said, there's something. Mm-hmm. We do know this. Why, when you read your English Bibles, are you still saying the Lord? Why don't you use the name you think you're calling him, Yahweh?
Right.
If we know it should be a violation. And I could not And what I'm finding is that Yahweh tells me, and my spiritual mother says, if you are a child of this family, a son, and we're not tolerant of things, then you better not be tolerant of things either.
Right.
And there's nothing to be ashamed of. And I finally, after we adjourned and I want to present some, you know, evidence before the group, they all wanted to listen, but they kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And then at the end, we were going to pray in the ending. I told them I'm in a somber mood. And I basically, I'm not going to have any more thing to do with it. I hope you find the path, but I don't want my family here.
Yeah, and that's, yeah, you've said a lot of things here that are interesting. The first you mentioned is questioning. And when you question, you are, what you're doing is extraordinarily destructive towards religion. It's extraordinarily destructive relative to patriotism, to politics, and to group affinities of any kind. If you begin to question what they are saying and whether or not it is logical, consistent, and in keeping with the evidence, what you find is that faith becomes almost impossible to maintain. You know, for example, if you know the Torah and you know what Paul wrote and you question why they are different, you will cease to be a Christian. It is that simple. But if you don't question, then you can continue to be a Christian. So questioning destroys our allegiance to, our affinity for, human institutions, particularly religious and political ones. But questioning is the mother's milk of understanding. If you question and you try to see how are these things related and what can I learn from them, what things can I validate as being true, and what can I erase from my memory banks that can be demonstrated to be unreliable, what you find is that questioning causes us to know, to understand, and ultimately prepares us to be able to trust and rely. The second thing you mentioned was Yahweh, and I used to write Yahweh too. And I don't. By the way, I don't think Yahweh is the least bit bothered by us using Yahweh. What's the problem with Yahweh is that it doesn't reflect the most popular, most common, most consistent pronunciation of the four vowels. And so it's simple to profound. When you begin your study and you see these four letters YHWH, you say, all right, well, that certainly doesn't sound Lord. And it's certainly not Jehovah. So how do I pronounce it? And you read that everybody says, well, it's pronounced Yahweh because they're four consonants. But then as you begin to study and you begin to look more deeply, you find that Torah, for example, tells you how to pronounce two of the four letters. Torah is probably, you know, Torah, Shalom, which you mentioned earlier, Goyim, Elohim, are words that are ubiquitous, that are known by all people because they have been repeated and retained so often. So where does the O sound come from in Torah? It's the law that's in the middle of Yahweh's name. And so if we're going to be consistent in the way we pronounce that O, Shalom. There's a W in the middle of Shalom that produces the vowel O sound. And so, and Torah, look at that. The last letter is a vowel. It produces the ah sound, just as it does in the verb that Yahweh said is the basis of his name, Haya. And so, since we know how to pronounce the Y as in Yisrael, it becomes obvious how God's name is more accurately pronounced. We'll be back with Shattering Myths and with Will after the break. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. We're here with Will, who began on a journey with a very simple question. Regarding the word Hebrew and what it meant, and has begun to, over time, not only refine his path, but come to enjoy the fact that the ultimate path to Yahweh is extraordinarily narrow. It is single file, and God is intolerant of us moving to the left or to the right of his path. Now, that does not preclude free will. God says that you can walk away from him. You can walk to the left and right of his path. You can do whatever you want to do. It says that the only way that you can be part of his covenant family is to walk to him along the path that he has provided. And while the understanding of that path is remarkably simple and straightforward, it is one that I think you only come to fully appreciate if you observe Yah's Torah very closely, consider its implications, and along with the path, you narrow your focus and understanding so that it's in harmony with God's. And when it is, there is ultimate shalom, reconciliation. So, Will, we are right on the same page here. You began to question your faith. You questioned the teachings of groups that you participated with along the way. You even questioned how to pronounce Yahweh's name, beginning with Yahweh, have realize that the best way to approach all of this is to consider the evidence, which is what God says. Listen to me. Observe what I have written in my Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and consider that evidence. Present that evidence not only to those who would be open to listening to me, but particularly with your own family.
Well, I got some evidence for people that are listening.
Okay.
And he does work in mysterious ways. I'm telling y'all, he really does.
Yeah.
Especially when you call his name, especially if you say Yah. He loves
Yes.
Yah.
Yes, he does.
Personal.
Yes.
I have my youngest stepdaughter. Her name is Monica. She's 24, but she has the mind of a 6-month-old child. My wife and I totally take care of her. When I was sitting down with her once, I had my arm around her and talking to her, I said, Monica, I know Yahweh is his name. He doesn't want to be associated with any other name or Yah, and I know this is the one we need to follow. He is our Father. And she looked at me. This is a short version of it. She looked at me and put her arm around my shoulder and neck and drew me close to her and kissed me on the side of my cheek and lip. And this is coming from a child who has no mental capability past a 6-month-old baby.
Wow.
And I know that he spoke to her spirit because she is spiritual. And her body's useless, but her spirit isn't. And she understood. And that told me, yeah, I know this is your name.
Yeah, Will, there are a number of passages that speak to the children of children of the covenant. And while God tells us that we have a propensity in most humans have the propensity to corrupt their children and lead them astray to the third and fourth generation. Those who have embraced the covenant and who share the covenant with their children, share the Torah with their children, even if it's as simple as to say, I know that Yah is our Father's name with their children, that the children of the covenant become children of the covenant. And so Yah has cut out a provision for you that is specifically designed to be a benefit for you. You have taken upon yourself the responsibility of caring for this child. And Yah is rewarding that by embracing this child. And that was God's way through this child of telling you, I know what you're doing here. I respect what you're doing here. I love what you're doing here. She, like you, is part of my family. That is it's not an exception to God's rule in terms of his path. It's a bit of a shortcut, if you will, and she got the benefit of that shortcut because you invested the time to take the long journey home. You just brought her with you.
Yeah, I'll tell you this, it's been a battle. It's been a battle, but I feel so much better spiritually the closer I get to him. I understand. And like I said, I'm going to try, like I said, I tell Yah, you know, you can hear me, Yah. that I trust you to take care of me, part of your family. This is your family, too. And like I said, I've been trying to do the best I can, but I need his help. There's no doubt. There's no doubt, because I know man's world is such a wicked, fallen place. They don't care about us. There's only one who cares about us, and I wish other people would hear it.
Yeah, and there's only one whom you can trust. And it's why, ultimately, the purpose of this program and the purpose of the books, Yada Yai and Intro to God, Even Questioning Paul, and to a great extent, Prophet of Doom, is really just to open people's eyes, to get their focus on the right place, to get them willing to start questioning. And then when they start questioning, at least provide a foundation and a perspective and some tools that they can use to do the same thing that you have done, to go on this journey of discovery. And it is painful along the way, because one of the things you find out is that, boy, when you start embracing what Yah has to say, there are a lot of people out there not going to like you very much.
No, I'm losing family.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, I want to exist in my Father's covenant.
Yeah,
I want
you lose.
Or his universe. I want to be taught by him forever. To me, how I'm understanding, I hate all this ritual stuff, even in the Messianic groups when we went to Sukkah, taking the prayer shawl and put it over the kids and let's pray. I don't think Yah likes that.
No.
He wants you face-to-face, like he said to Abraham, walk with me. Talk with me. They argued back and forth, and he laughed at Yah.
Correct.
He told him he was going to be a dad at 100 years old.
Right.
I mean, I was never taught this, but it's right there in front of us.
Right. Yeah, we know that that the name is, at least we think the name is Isaac. We don't know exactly Yishak. And there's not one in a thousand, maybe even a million Christians that knows what the name Yishak means or why that name was chosen by God. And it's a profound story, and it's one of these things, again, where you're, once your path becomes more refined, once you crave knowledge and understanding, what you find is that there are two profound insights with just something as simple as the name of the first child of the covenant. That name reinforces the fact that we can have such a relaxed an enjoyable relationship with God, that we can actually laugh at him. That's what Abraham was laughing at him.
Well, that's what I do every Shabbat is, you know, we have meals prepared. I always invite y'all. If you ever want to appear, you know, go ahead. This is for you, too. I mean, you know, and I give thanks for this food, you know, but I don't drop to my knees and kiss his
feet. Of course not.
I understand that he's our Father. And then after that, after I read and recite, talk, got my daughter in our family room. I get my bass out. I compose music with my spiritual mother. And she makes me do things after practice and practice. I get sounds out. I giggle like a little schoolgirl.
Right.
And I guess that's his maternal side. I guess I have one too.
Yeah, right. And, you know, it's one thing to be able to laugh with God. And we do that routinely because he obviously has a sense of humor.
Oh, he's got a great sense of humor.
But imagine a God so different than the one of religion that rather than being in fear of him, rather than being bowing down to him, you can laugh at him. And rather than smiting you for laughing at him, he chuckles right back and said, okay, all right. Now then, the name of your first kid is going to be Laughter. And what it also tells us, if the name of the first child of the covenant, the first product of the covenant, is Laughter, doesn't it define the purpose of the covenant?
Yes, to have a good time. And
yes, that's why each of these steps that we walk from our world to God's, while they are invitations for us to meet with him, that's why they're called Mikra. They're invitations for us to be called out of this world and to meet with him. They're all also identified as Chag. Chag is the Hebrew word for party, celebration, festival feast.
Yeah,
these are not dour things. These are, let's get together and have some fun.
That's what I want doing these festivals of his, because the ones that we've been to, I tell you, I think I've been attacked spiritually. Every time we've gone to the two sukkahs I've been to, the same group, I don't have fun. I feel miserable because it seems so ritualistic what they're doing. Everything is just planned out. We just can't get together, like, eat a meal and talk with Yah and read his word. Everybody read it. And and just laugh and have a good time constantly.
Yeah. Larry, who joins this program often, he has a Facebook group, and on their group has, along with others in the forum for Yada Yada, I met last year. It was about 20 to 30 some odd, and just camped out during Sukkah and had a grand old time. And something they're going to do again this coming Sukkah, and I think also going to celebrate Pesach together. But the entire purpose was getting together as a family, because, yes, you have lost family members. Yahweh and Yahusha both said this, that you would lose family members. What did Yahweh say? Walk away from your family. Walk.
Said that people will hate you for my name's sake.
Yeah. And so walk away from. Yeah. And by the way, nobody hates anybody for the name Jesus, but they begin to use Yahusha and tell them that his name is not Jesus, and find out how many people hate you. We're telling them the truth. We're telling them amongst the most profound truths in the universe. That once you understand that Yahweh chose the name Yahusha to fulfill and honor his Torah promises, to engage and benefit us through this covenant relationship, and that and all that Yahusha means, which is that it's Yahweh himself who is engaged in the process of saving us, that when you tell them that profound truth, they hate you for it. Because it means that their religion has lied to them about its central plank, about Jesus. And when they find that that's a myth, it is extraordinarily disruptive to their lives. We will return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. I hope you'll join us. And please, if you'd like to engage in this conversation, you're invited to do so at 877-300-7645. Final segment of the first hour of Shattering Myths. I am your host, Deanna. We're engaging in a conversation with Will. Will, one of the things that is always interesting to me is how an individual not only what triggers their initial willingness to walk away from their religion and then to embrace Yah's teaching and walk to him instead of religion. What triggers it? I've shared my triggers in the past, but also what things along the way caused you to recognize that while you might have been moving in the right direction, the initial institutions that you associated with were not telling the whole truth. So what were the initial triggers, and what caused you to question the associations that you made along the way?
Okay, one of the initial triggers when I was quite young in my Baptist upbringing, I'd say in my, when I was going to a church here in Iowa, when I was in my 20s, in our Sunday school church, the pastor, and I've heard this in other churches too, they would ask, who's your favorite character in the so-called New Testament? And my answer was always, when I knew his name was Jesus, I'd say, Jesus, the Messiah. Mm-hmm. Everybody says, oh, yeah, well, that's a given. But other than Jesus, who's your favorite? And I would think and think and think. I go, I really don't have one. I mean, I admire the others, but, you know, no, I have to stick with Jesus. And then everybody else, the majority of the time, would say, and I bet you can guess who they're going to say to you.
Yeah.
Paul. And I'm like, well, why would you want to listen to a man that's not the Messiah more than the Messiah? And so that was the initial trigger. Then in college, I started watching a gentleman, well, before that, a gentleman in California.
Well, can I comment? I mean, I'd love to. You bring up a point, and this just gives our listeners the opportunity to think. And anytime we have that opportunity, I hate to miss it up. So I apologize for interrupting. It's just that it's my nature is that when somebody says something, says, aha, there's a teachable moment, I can't help but to jump in. So
yeah.
I apologize for my shortcomings here.
No, I'm going to hang up.
First of all, Jesus is a character in Christianity. He is a caricature. He's modeled more after Dionysus, after Bacchus, after Osiris, after Tammuz, after the death and resurrection gods of the pagan religions of yesteryear. The Jesus of Christianity bears almost nothing in common with the Messiah Yahusha. He doesn't have the same title. He doesn't have the same name. He doesn't have the same relationship with Yahweh. And he is a founder of a new religion as opposed to being the affirmation of the original relationship. And so the Christian Jesus and the actual Yahusha bear nothing in common, which means that the Christian Jesus is a caricature, just a character. He's a caricature. And that's an extraordinarily profound thing to know, that when the Christians say they follow Jesus, the fact is they don't even listen to him. And if they were actually following Yahusha, they would be Torah observant. And they're Torah opposed. He was Torah observant. It was the single most important aspect of his life. He lived, spoke, ate, drank, just literally embodied the Torah. And so if you are not Torah observant, you are not a follower of Jesus, even if you knew that his name was Yahusha. Second of all, you mentioned Paul. Paul is also a character. He's playing a role. Paul even admits to playing this role. He says, with the Jews, I am a Jew. With Gentiles, I am as a Gentile. With those who are Torah observant, I am as if I am Torah observant, even though I am not. With those who are not Torah observant, I also am not Torah observant. I am all things to all people, so I might win them.
Yep.
He's playing a role.
I really don't see it.
Yeah, he's admitting that he's playing a role. Do you find anywhere where Yahusha says, "Hey, I'm Torah observant when it suits, and when I'm not, I'm not. When it doesn't, I'm not. When it suits me, to be a Yehudim, I am Yehudim. But when it appeals to me to be something else, you know, hey, I'll be Roman."
Sounds like a politician, doesn't it?
Yes. Does God say, you know, when it suits me, I'm going to affirm my Torah, and when it doesn't, I'm going to contradict it? And why is it that Christians can't see how utterly ridiculous that is? And yet they can't. They're blinded to it. He is their favorite character. Why? Because he's the founder of their religion. What he did is told them, hey, all you have to do is believe. You can, and you don't even have to go any further than just believe in what I'm telling you. You don't have to read the Torah. It's been annulled. It enslaves. You don't have to get to know Yahweh. Simply